Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good today, too. Thanks for asking. And we want to thank you all for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will talk about the old saying, practice makes perfect, and look at the revision, practice makes perfect when practice is perfect, to compare the differences. In this show, we will be discussing the value and importance of the divine idea in a lifestyle plan as a way to perfect practice. Listen as we explain how truth corrects error in the same way light dispels darkness. John 8:32, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are Talking Consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and experience perfect practice. Swami, the title of today's show is Reviving Divine Science with Perfect Practice. Can you tell us and our listeners, what was your main inspiration about doing a show with that title?
Well, I think what I want to do is clarify the title that we're not looking to revive divine science by improving the science or practice of the science, but we're looking to resurrect the demonstration of divine science, to demonstrate this principle with certainty and precision as it reveals itself to us. And what we really want to try and do is explore some of the behaviors that we can perform in order to help us induce this revelation, this God experience that we're talking about, divine science.
But why do you feel like we have to revive divine science with this perfect practice?
Well, because I don't really think that collectively we have kept up with the movement that began with Christian Science, what Mary Baker Eddy discovered back in 1866, because from my understanding, she was probably one of the most prolific healers that was ever on the planet. And Christian Science in its early days had a much better track record than what appears to be happening today. And so a lot of the writings that she had, there were some concerns that she herself, Mary Baker Eddy, had that they would lose her discovery. And to the best of my experience with it, I kind of feel that it is, if not lost, it is diminished enormously. And so it has been a big part of my endeavor has been to revive what it was that she discovered.
Well, so I have a thought. So would you say that's exactly what happened to, I'm talking very early Christianity, Jesus' disciples, and maybe her rediscovery of that, maybe she also felt that that was a lost art, a lost healing art?
Well, if you research it, which I have done since I discovered Christian Science, that the first 200 to 300 years in Christianity, all Christianity was healing the sick, reforming sinners, raising the dead, preaching the gospel. It really wasn't about a church or a religion per se. Then it kind of went underground, and what emerged from that was the church. And there was a whole different message that was being taught and presented. And so she revived early Christianity. She figured the message of the Christ was to heal the sick, reform sinners, raise the dead. And she started demonstrating that with, for the best of my understanding, scientific certainty. Most of her healings are well documented with a lot of supportive statements with credibility. But today, my experience has been that you're hard-pressed to find anybody who can demonstrate this with any kind of certainty.
All right, well, let's get to actually talking about the old saying, practice makes perfect. And what do you think that that means to you?
Well, I think it's, again, a human rule that we have created, but typically with repetition comes absorption, that if somebody continues to do something in a repetitive fashion, that you can internalize it and it has much more spontaneous, natural flow to it. On a human level, we would refer to as perfecting something. But by the same token, what we're really trying to figure out are what are some of the strategies that we can employ that will help us induce this God experience, to induce this revelation, because that's what I think religion is there for, to help us relink, to join with this divine mind that holds the template for perfect creation.
So the next part of the phrase we want to look at is practice makes perfect when practice is perfect. In my earlier years teaching martial arts and Tai Chi, we would say that to our students. We applaud you for practicing, but there is going to be some kind of a disconnect if your practice isn't perfect. So how do we apply that particular phrase to this divine science?
Well, again, especially coming from the Kriya Yoga perspective, where we're accustomed to employing strategies, that we have a very specific intention behind what it is that we're doing. You work with skillful use of thought, skillful use of breath, skillful use of water, skillful use of food, skillful use of exercise. But we're not doing this because we want to look younger, live longer, or be more desirable while we are in this human belief. That what we're really looking to do is transcend the limitations of this belief in two powers, rise above the limitations of karmic law, and experience what is called liberation, freedom. We employ strategies with this intention. Even though you're working with yourself on a physical and a mental level, your goal is really consciousness, the expansion of consciousness beyond just seeing yourself as a separate entity. The reunion, the joining of your identity with something that is pure, powerful, sacred, inexhaustible, unchanging, eternal. And so, how do I know that what I'm doing, what I'm calling truth, what I'm calling God, is this one true God? That was the one thing that I really found that was so beneficial with Mary Baker Eddy's discovery, that she puts healing on the table. For 30 some odd years, I employed strategies. And all of a sudden, finding myself in a condition where I was ineffectual. What I was doing wasn't able to correct what it was that was appearing in my senses. And so as a result, I had to step out of what I was doing. But without putting healing on the table, it's very easy to think that you are in compliance with this divine law, to think that you're spiritual, to think that what you're doing is working. But then all of a sudden you find yourself where it's ineffectual, and sickness, suffering, lack, limitation, pain, these are all good conditions that we can use to help us understand or prove what it is that we're doing, to see, is it working? I love what Mary Baker Eddy says. Can you say to the proud wave, no further, and it stops? That if what you're doing is in compliance with divine science, then it must demonstrate.
I want to talk more about some things that maybe we should eliminate from our practice. And I have been reading a book entitled The Master Speaks by Joel S. Goldsmith. And in the chapter entitled God, he says, "When you simply repeat the words, 'I am God,' that is not true. But when you hear those words within you, that is truth." So I kind of wanted to see if you could maybe dig a little deeper with that for us. Why shouldn't we say, "I am God"?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. The main reason is that there's no power in the words. The other thing is that, in my opinion, it's not true. Man is the reflection of God, that we are the divine idea. So we are like a thought in divine mind. We're not the divine mind. And again, come back to what C.S. Lewis said. He didn't think that it was possible to have a personal relationship with God in the same way that he didn't think Hamlet would ever know Shakespeare, which is what we are to God. We are a thought in this divine mind. We're not God, but we are God's idea. So the origins of everything that appears in your five senses is this divine mind. And also, if we stay with the level of belief to say, "I am God," that I believe that I am God, again, what we're learning is that it doesn't go far enough. That in order to prove that the I of my being is this one divine life, I must be able to demonstrate that. And in order to demonstrate it, you would have to be able to say to the proud wave, "No further," and it stops. But there's a lot that must be in place in order for one to reach this level of understanding, because we must assume spiritual identity. You can't be a mortal creature, you can't be a human being, and have this understanding of yourself as the reflection of the divine. Matter and spirit are opposites. And so in order for us to communicate with this higher law, this divine science, we must assume spiritual identity. And that's very different than saying, "I am God," or even believing that I am God. Belief will give you the promise of God, but it won't give you the experience of God.
Well, later on in this chapter, Joel Goldsmith does say that there are some certain things that we can meditate with and realize. And one of those things is we can say or think or feel or believe that the Christ resides in us. That was one of his options that he was saying, as well as reverting back to the Bible and saying, "I and my Father are one." And like you said, not just saying it, but really realizing it. And would that be part of our perfect practice?
Again, as we start to drill down with some of these statements and we try and look at them, "Christ resides within me," or "I and the Father are one," what we really are trying to do now is we're trying to convert these words into an experience. We want to convert these words into something that I can do in order for me to have the experience, this revelation, God is all. And I can't have that as a human being. And so we need to understand just the simple word Christ. What is Christ? Because Christ is the spirit within. Christ is the saving aspect of truth. Christ is what makes this divine idea intelligible to human consciousness. So it becomes the bridge between spirit and who I think I am. But at some point, we are going to have to put off the old man, and we're going to have to assume spiritual identity. And spirit being all, spirit being whole, complete, the idea of this creative principle is eternal, unchanging, completely fulfilled. But it doesn't report in our five-sense mind. So now we are going to have to practice making our mind an avenue of awareness for something that is invisible and intangible to corporeal sense. And in the framework of practicing that, like we're saying, perfect practice, because you can meditate per se for hours on end. But if you don't know the truth that's going to make you free, then you're not going to get much of a demonstration out of that.
Well, this is a great pause to hear a word from our sponsors. So listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments. Kriya Yoga Theory 2 is a unique and revolutionary practice and forum designed to facilitate the growth process in human development. Apotheosis is a real experience and has an evidence procedure. You cannot lead someone to permanent change by doing for them what they must do themselves. Personal accountability and responsibility are the foundation of Kriya Yoga Theory 2. You must be engaged and devoted. Prana power brings virtue to overcome fear, wisdom to overcome ignorance, purpose to overcome selfishness, enthusiasm to overcome laziness. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. These sessions are a celestial positioning system to guide the individual into union with the divine. For more information or to sign up for your next session online, go to www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste. Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. Swami, I see we have some words here by Joel S. Goldsmith from Beyond Words and Thoughts, Chapter 1, Towards the Experience. I believe he's talking about healing and this experience that you just talked about. Would you read that for us?
Yeah, he says here, the essence of living and healing through the infinite way is this experience. Those who have done healing work through the light given them in this message know that there is nothing in the teaching that heals. No matter what there is in the infinite way writing that you know and repeat, it will not heal you or anybody else of anything. You are not going to be able to heal until you have an experience. And with every healing, there must be an experience until the time comes when you are so living in it that it may be necessary to renew it only once, twice, or three times a day. And then throughout the day, all the other healings take place because you are living in that experience. And I think what he's really letting us know here is that all healing is just revealing. It is the responsibility of the practitioner to abide in this truth, to know the divine idea, the spiritual fact of being, and not react to the testimony of the senses. And so a big part of practicing perfect practice is knowing this divine creation, which is right here, right now, and perfect, is all that there is. And to acknowledge that is what will activate it in our experience.
Now, is this experience he's talking about, is that when we actually have this communication with God, when we feel this or hear this still small voice?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what he's talking about. I think even Herb Fitch, like in Revelation of St. John, Class 1b, he says, and of course, that is why there is grace where Christ is recognized as self. Because Christ recognized is omniscience and omnipotence. That this one divine life is really the only power in this universe. But in Kriya Yoga, we use the term avidya, ignorance. It's when we're mistaking the impermanent for the permanent. We're mistaking either the material or the mental for the spiritual. If we don't know this truth, if we don't know God aright, then we're in the trap. And what you're doing is you believe in something other than this truth of being, and your belief in it gives the appearance of having some semblance of power, but it is not the omnipotence of divine law.
Well, I think we have something from Mary Baker Eddy as well, the body, that can also lend us some light on this subject.
Yeah, she says in that paper, and she quotes Paul, who says, "Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think anything as of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God." And that's 2 Corinthians 3:5. She continues, "Our sufficiency to think is of God. Our ability to form thoughts and opinions is of our own ignorance, our belief in duality. But our power or sufficiency to think is when we think with God as God." So here, perfect practice, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to come out of the modes of mortal thinking. In Kriya Yoga, they call it pratyahara, sense withdrawal, where you rise above corporeal sense. But as Mary Baker Eddy tells us, we must rise above corporeal sense and correct it. See, how we think is what we become. And if we are still thinking with a mortal mind, and we're individualized from world mind or world thought, then we have a belief in two powers. And basically, we are unconscious to this divine law, which is right here, right now, but it requires a belief in one power.
So when she's talking about our ignorance and our belief in duality, and you just mentioned two powers, that could be summarized that we believe in the human experience and God. That's the ignorance. Is that correct?
Yeah, and we believe in good and bad. We believe in life and death. We're working with the human concept about God. I really like the way Mary Baker Eddy continues in that paper called The Body. And she says, "Thinking with God as God shows me the perfection of the body. But the body is just as perfect before I know it as after." And then she continues, "All that we need to do, and it will keep us busy, is to train our thought faithfully and persistently in the acknowledgement of the truth of God's presence. Train it to judge righteous judgment, to see God and God only, to think God and God only. Having accepted the omnipresence, hold to it no matter what the apparent condition may seem to be. In treating yourself, never deal with appearances or symptoms. Do not center your thought upon organs or functions. Infinite substance, power, intelligence, and activity are in that place and do not need your suggestions. Do not try to formulate in thought the perfect body. Stop thinking about the body or trying to picture it as perfect. From your standpoint, our highest perception of the body today is far short of what body really is. Stop tinkering with it mentally. Loose it and let it go. Just know that it is God's body and that God is this moment and every moment forming it or bringing it forth according to His word, His divine idea. Jesus recognized Lazarus as an undying manifestation of God. You are that undying and perfect manifestation of God." That to me would be something that you'd want to incorporate in your practice. To really live out from this divine idea, to know that you are the reflection of an indestructible principle.
I was listening to a lecture by Herb Fitch, and it was the Revelation of St. John. And he was talking about us as humans crucifying the Christ. And I'm hoping that maybe you can review that with our listeners, because I also think that is something that we really want to try to stay away from doing.
Right. The minute that we accept that we are a mortal creature, the minute we accept that we are finite, we have a lifespan, we are piercing the Christ, the spirit within, the truth of our being. You're saying that you're not an eternal spiritual being at that point. In Revelation of St. John, when they talk about read, hear, and keep, in order for us to really demonstrate this divine omnipresence, we have to go way beyond just reading. We must live and move and have our being in this truth. And the other thing is that we have to learn to rise above corporeal sense. We can't accept the testimony of our five senses. The mind that we have accepted to get us through this life is now starting to prove itself to be undependable. So we need to think differently. The Bible calls it repent. We need to start to move from corporeal sense to spiritual sense, to sow to the Spirit. The invisible, intangible, divine omnipresence is the only thing that's real. And when you look at everything that we are socialized with today, all our medical sciences work from corporeal sense. And so we lose the benefit of divine law because we have a belief in two powers, good and bad, life and death. And so we're trying to fix things. And basically, like we have said in other shows, our sciences today are busy trying to figure out how the unreal became real instead of working with this truth to revive divine science, to move beyond working with material and mental means. Because there are a lot of people today who don't agree with Western medical practices, but then move into what they call alternative methods, which are working with thought and belief. And here we have a working model that Mary Baker Eddy gave us, demonstrated divine science to us, and she's saying that you can't do that if you want to get the best result.
Swami, I'm hoping we can explain in the summary we were going to talk about how truth corrects error in the same way light dispels darkness.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful thing that you can start to work with. A lot of it has to come back to what we were saying. How do I know that what I'm calling truth is this one true divine law and not the human thought about this divine law? That's why I really like what Mary Baker Eddy does. She demonstrates the presence of it. And if what you're calling truth doesn't change what is appearing in your five senses, then chances are that you're still working with belief and concept, and you're not making your mind an avenue of awareness for the presence of divine mind. You're not letting divine mind take over the scientific government of your body. And you haven't accepted spiritual identity. You're still operating from the human level. You're still working on an objective level and haven't graduated from personal to impersonal, subjective spiritual identity.
Well, it is about that time to start closing down our show for today. So listeners, be sure to visit the website, www.ipdtransform.com. On the homepage, when the fading banner comes up with Blog Talk Radio, you can click that on, and that will direct you to the Blog Talk Radio Show catalog page. As well, if you click the products tab, that will direct you to online classes, and that will take you to all the classes that Swami has available for you. Swami, any of the final thoughts about today's program?
Well, I would like to encourage people to join our Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and experience perfect practice. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.